Listen local.
For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr. Welcome to Farm and Country, locally produced radio about rural life in the Catskills and the Delaware River Valley. On today's show, Lee, who designs pollinator gardens along the upper Delaware River Valley, says hello to Farm and Country from the recent Narrowsburg Honeybee Festival. From Wild Yarrow Farm, Jeffrey Rose helps us clean up our garden beds as we wind down another growing season. This is a sustainable soundbite from 2023. Christine San Jose gets the last word with an archived poetic prompt to vote in this year's election. All of that and Keith Hubbard's Star Talk coming up on today's Farm and Country, after news headlines from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. Vice President Kamala Harris released a report on her medical history this morning. Her campaign sees it as an opportunity to contrast the 59-year-old Democratic nominee with the 78-year-old Donald Trump, as NPR's Asma Khalid reports.
This is the first time Harris has released a medical report. Harris's medical summary concludes she is in, quote, excellent health and possesses the physical and mental resiliency to successfully execute the duties of the presidency. It also indicated she has seasonal allergies, takes vitamin D supplements, and wears contacts. The Harris campaign sees the release of her medical report as a way to focus attention on how little is known about Trump's current health. In November of 2023, Trump released a brief note from his doctor that said his overall health was excellent and, quote, his cognitive exams were exceptional. If Trump is elected again, he'd be 82 by the end of his term. Asma Khalid, NPR News.
Vice President Harris is returning to North Carolina today. She was there a week ago to view the damage left behind by Hurricane Helene. She is set to rally supporters in Greenville tomorrow, just days before early voting begins in the state. Trump is to participate in a round table in Las Vegas today before heading to Coachella, California for a campaign rally. The Justice Department is suing Virginia. The suit linked to an executive order on voter registration, as VPM News' Jack Khalil reports from Richmond.
In August, Republican Governor Glenn Youngkin told his top elections official to do something daily: remove people from the voter rolls if they didn't meet voting criteria, like citizenship. The DOJ says that violates a requirement that states finish voter registration maintenance 90 days before an election. Its lawyers said it's meant to give eligible voters time to deal with an incorrect removal. That happened last year when the Department of Elections said it mistakenly removed hundreds of people from voter rolls. Youngkin called the suit politically motivated, and he would fight it. This is actually the second lawsuit on the order this week. On Monday, a group of organizations made similar arguments as the feds in the same court. For NPR News, I'm Jad Khalil in Richmond.
Health officials in Gaza say 49 Palestinians have been killed in the past 24 hours, and more deaths are feared as the Israeli military intensifies its operation in northern Gaza. Israeli forces have been pounding the area around Jabalia. Sam Rose is the senior deputy director of UNRWA, the UN Palestinian Relief Agency in Gaza. He told the BBC that the area is seeing heavy fighting.
We've recorded about 300 armed incidents in that area over the past 3 days alone, which is more than we've seen throughout September. So really some of the most intense fighting that we've seen in that part of Gaza since the start of the war.
Israel has not commented, but has previously said its troops have located weapons and are dismantling military infrastructure. This is NPR News.
Apple Pie Palooza is today, and we've got pies to buy donated by local bakers, including Be Kind Bakery, Beach Lake Bakery, Bethel Market Cafe, Delaware Valley Job Corps, Foster Supply Hospitality, Jeff Bake Shop, Proper To Go, Roger That Bakery, and SUNY Sullivan. Radio Catskill thanks these pie donors. Help us honor their generosity by getting their pies into the right hands. Yours. Come by, get your pie, Apple Pie Palooza, 3 to 6 today at Catskill Brewery, Livingston Manor.
Support comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, fighting for clean air, land, and water since 2008, both locally and beyond. Information online at their Main Street storefront in Narrowsburg or their office in the Narrowsburg Union. DamascusCitizens.org.
Welcome back to Farm and Country. I'm your host, Rosie Starr. On today's show, Lee, who designs pollinator gardens along the Upper Delaware River Valley, says hello to us from this year's Narrowsburg Honeybee Festival. Jeffrey Rose from Wild Yarrow Farm in Coshecton, New York, helps us clean up garden beds as we wind down another growing season. This is a sustainable soundbite from 2023. Christine San Jose gets the last word with an archived poetic prompt to vote in this year's election. But first, here is Keith Hubbard with this week's Star Talk report. Thank you for joining us on Radio Catskill for this week's locally produced Farming Country.
For Farm and Country, I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk. The moon will drift eastward this week as it approaches Saturn, culminating with the moon being 5 degrees off Saturn's left side on Tuesday. Tonight, the moon will be 29 degrees west, or to the right, of Saturn. The two will be visible at nightfall and will remain visible until around 3 a.m. Throughout the week, the moon will drift backward across the sky. On Tuesday, the moon will be 5 degrees east, or to the left of Saturn. While the moon will be racing across the sky, Saturn will appear to be stationary. The moon will be moving about 15 degrees across the sky each night. Part of the reason for the moon's apparent swift movement on the celestial dome is its proximity to Earth. The moon is vastly closer to Earth compared to the background stars. As a result, a small change in direction by the moon corresponds to a large change relative to the background stars. You can see this for yourself using your thumb. Close one eye and hold your thumb with an outstretched arm. Keeping your thumb stationary, alternate which eye is closed. Notice how your thumb moves relative to the background? Now hold your thumb close to your face and repeat the experiment. Your thumb appears to move further relative to the background when it is closer to your face. The same concept occurs with the moon and the background stars. Track the moon this week as it drifts eastward in the sky, coming within 5 degrees of Saturn on Tuesday. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future Star Talk segments, my email address is startalk@farmandcountry.org. For Farm and Country and Star Talk, this has been Keith Hubbard, reminding you to keep looking up.
Just as summer bowed out to autumn, the annual Narrowsburg Honeybee Festival took place in September. This year, that event blossomed on the grassy lawn outside of Fort Delaware. Vendors were available to offer honey products. Participants of all ages milled around, tasting, sipping, and chatting about the beautiful season. The colorful banner, Project Meadow, caught my eye, so I walked over to that table to say hello to Lee, who was happy to greet Radio Catskill's Farming Country.
Hi, my name's Lee, and I am the owner and designer of gardens in the Catskills. I call it gardening in the Catskills because it's very specific. We have deer pressure, groundhogs, obviously, but then there's also rocks. So I think it's very particular on how we garden. And I like to promote natives. Natives like goldenrod, milkweed. I'm a big milkweed pusher because that's the only plant that monarch caterpillars can eat. So it's important. And I like to create small ecosystems in people's yards where it can help out the smaller bugs and, of course, create some beauty.
Dira.com. So this is a service that you're offering people?
Right. So I design, I install, and I can maintain gardens in the area. So I'm based out of Narrowsburg, but I do about a half hour, 45-minute radius. Mm-hmm.
What kind of experience do you have with this? You're so enthusiastic.
Well, I grew up gardening with my parents on my great-grandfather's property. So I have a lot of great memories as a child. And then I started training with the Master Gardeners of Penn State. So I have my certification. And from there, during COVID, is actually when I started gardening for other people. We were outside. Somebody saw me gardening, and she asked if I could dig a hole. And it just kind of started from there.
You mentioned the importance of milkweed for monarch caterpillars. What else can you tell us about the stages of how that plant grows?
The plant specifically comes back every year, and it spreads its seeds. So during the winter, it's cold stratification, which means during the winter it gets ready, and then it grows during the spring. And the monarchs are pretty amazing, in my opinion. When they're butterflies and they lay their eggs, specifically on the milkweed so that when the caterpillars are born, they have food immediately. It's just pure amazing to me.
It's amazing to me that anyone can have a garden around here with the amount of varmints or just community members in the form of animals that munch on everything. What recommendations do you have to attract pollinators, bees, butterflies, and what methods do you have to keep the critters off of them?
The first method is deer spray, definitely. But you can do some preventative stuff where you plant things that are deer resistant. So I'm actually working on a garden in Barryville with one of my clients that's all deer resistant. So we have some annuals, we have some perennials. And it's just a matter of figuring out what works best in your area specifically. So we're doing a little experimenting with some education behind it. Like snapdragons, deer don't touch. They're annuals, so they're a great additive to your garden. Cosmos, generally, they, meaning deer, don't touch them. It's a matter of kind of seeing in your specific yard, because groundhogs totally will destroy something that a deer won't. So spray repellent is the best thing if you don't want to experiment.
I made up a theme song years ago. If the deer don't eat it, the groundhogs will. If the groundhogs don't eat it, the chipmunks will. And if the chipmunks don't eat it, the slugs will.
That is the truest song I've ever heard. But with slugs, your best thing is to weed. If you have less weeds, there's less slugs. So, I mean, there's other things you can do, but that's your first step, to have less slugs.
Do you have knowledge of maybe some herbal perennials that are beneficial to bees and that would be animal resistant?
So sage is deer resistant. I can't say for the others, but that's a great one. There's rosemary. If you let it go to bloom, the bees are all over it. Same with sage. If you let it bloom, then seed, the pollinators love it.
That's good to know. I'm beginning to think that deers don't see certain colors, purple and maybe that sage color.
Yeah, there's a lot of purple colors that the deer don't touch, actually. I hadn't thought about the color, but they're very scent oriented. So that's why the deer repellent works the best. So they don't like mint. A great late bloomer is mountain mint. And it gets these beautiful white flowers. It gets about 2 feet tall, and all the pollinators are all over it.
Well, thank you for your inspiration. It's very helpful to myself and listeners. How do folks get a hold of you?
You can find me at projectmeadow.com.
Okay, thank you. I love this time of the year in the garden. Pulling seed heads to store for next year, observing the shapes and colors of fading plant life, savoring the successes, and accepting the, well, I won't call them failures. There's always so much to learn, and I found in our community a great source of knowledge. I asked Jeffrey Rose from Wild Yarrow Farm in Coshecton, New York, if I could visit his garden at the end of his growing season. He was happy to share his method of preparing to put the garden to bed for the winter in preparation for next spring.
Hi, Rosie. Thank you for coming back. It's always a pleasure to see you. Before we step into the garden, I wanted to point out some of the plants are dying back. These tall plants here are elecampane. It's a native wildflower in the area. The roots are used medicinally for respiratory illnesses. As well, we have the New York ironweed, which you can see back there with those beautiful purple flowers. These are all called herbaceous perennials, and that means they grow new from the ground up every year. So you can see they're starting to die from the tops down, and they'll die back completely, and next year they'll come up anew. And we're going to talk about the different kinds of plants and where they're at this time of year when we go through the garden. I want to quickly show you in the pots, you'll see there's some new green growth. This is a cover crop mix that I plant. As I pull out the things out of the ground and out of the pots, we put in this and it will kill over the winter. And then in the spring, we can just lift off the dead parts and it will have imparted new nitrogen and new nutrients into the soil. And this other plant right in front of you is called comfrey, and it has a lot of benefits for the garden. And we're going to talk about that more when we go into the garden here.
Okay. Well, I know farmers use cover crop. Mm-hmm. I've never seen it in a pot, and I like that idea.
This way the weeds don't have a chance to grow up in that pot. I'll put new flowers in it next year. It's a mixture of field peas and oats, and I'll show you some. I have some over here. You can see the seeds. We come through this way.
I love the way you have your paths here.
Well, I'm not one for straight lines in a garden. Here, come back this way, Rosie. I want to show you. We planted birdhouse gourds, and these are gourds that you can cure over about a year, and then you drill a hole and make them into birdhouses. And if you look here, there are many beautiful gourds hanging from the trellis here.
It's an architectural sculptural. Oh, I love it. It's like a little cave.
Isn't that fantastic?
It's beautiful.
And you'll see the sunflowers have now finished. And these, you can see, you'd know that the sunflower seeds are ready when the back of the head turns yellow and the edges of the sunflower turn brown. And then you can see there are hundreds and hundreds of seeds here, which you can put out for the birds, or what I'll do is cut off the heads and give them to my chickens.
Okay. Well, I think that the bees might be very happy here.
Well, that is intentional as well. We have a very varied insectiary here. We draw in all kinds of insects. As we've discussed in the past, diversity is key in the garden. The more kinds of plants you can bring in, the better. You're going to bring in more and more beneficial insects. You'll see right at your feet here, this is also the cover crop. So when I pulled out the onions that were in this bed, I had beautiful cipollini onions in here. Once I pulled them up, I raked it up, and then I scattered the cover crop seed, and now you'll see it's about 10 inches tall. It's a mix of peas and oat grass, and this will die off in the winter, and then I can just rake off the dead leaves, and it'll be ready for planting first thing in the spring.
Okay, what's next?
So down here, you'll see this is arugula that was recently planted. There are certain things you can plant in the fall. Lettuces, arugula, spinach, things that like the cooler weather that don't do so well in the midsummer. And so these will be ready to eat pretty soon. Over here is some lettuce also that I planted just a couple of weeks ago. And you'll see they're already heading up and getting ready.
My goodness, those are really lovely heads of lettuce.
This one is called Tom Thumb. It's a really nice butterhead. You take the whole head at once. It's fast growing. It's slow to bolt. So this is a real favorite for late season growing.
But will it take a frost?
It'll take a light frost. The lettuces and the arugulas can take it. You know, once we get into the really cold weather, then that's over.
With all the seed heads that you have here, do you get flocks of birds?
We get a lot of birds, sure. A whole lot of birds. We collect a lot of the seed that we produce to use for next year. I let weeds and mustards and wildflowers grow up all around and through the fencing. And this way the insects find their food, their natural food, instead of just coming right in and eating our vegetables. This is Verbena bonariensis. It's a beautiful annual reseeding, self-seeding annual, great cut flower too. And the insects love that as well. You see, this area that's been cleared, this is where the carrots and the cucumbers were. So I pulled out all the weeds and raked it out. And now I'm going to scatter seed these, which, of course, is the radio. You can't see them, listeners, but there are pea seeds and oat seeds here. And you thickly sow them in and rake them into the ground. And within a very short period of time, you have a cover crop that's feeding the soil.
Mm-hmm. Boy, that's a nice big bag. Are they organic seeds?
They are. I get these from Hudson Valley Seed Company. They have some great mixes. And this is their field pea and oat mix. Highly recommend it. And this year, for the first time, I thought, well, why don't I put it in those big pots outside instead of letting the goldenrod seeds and all the other stuff get in there and make it harder for me in the spring to put flowers and food in them.
Oh my gosh, the soil here must be so healthy.
Well, we put a lot of effort into that. You have to take care of your soil. It's more than just the plants. You have to feed the soil. So we do that by adding organic fertilizer. We also have big compost piles over at that end of the nursery where we mix in the litter from our chicken coop, all of the garden waste, and then we let them age for 2 years because chicken manure is very acidic and you have to be careful. You don't want to burn your plants. But then we add that in here by the wheelbarrow full. And we also have compost piles throughout the garden. As I'm weeding or clearing things away, I just let them stack up in certain piles inside the fenced area, and I'll mulch them over for the winter. And then within a year or two, just by passively composting it, you'll be able to rake it out. It'll turn itself into soil. Where you're standing is an area that we're clearing for the garlic bed. The garlic will be going in soon. At the time this airs, it'll be time to get your garlic in the ground. So what I'm doing is clearing out the weeds here, and we'll add some more soil, some more fertilizer, and some more compost, and we'll get the garlic in so that we'll have enough for next year. Mm-hmm. We try to plant enough garlic so we have it for the whole year, as well as enough to plant for the following year.
What variety do you use?
Oh, many varieties, but hardneck. Hardneck varieties. I like the really big, robust ones. They'll last through most of the winter. They start to get soft, but by then the spring garlic should be coming up, and you can pull them up early and use those. So we can always have garlic without having to go to the grocery store.
Oh, I feel so lucky to be standing here with you on this sun-filled autumn. It's just an experience to be here with you.
It's a magical time of year. There's a real true beauty to the decay of the garden, to the closing out of that cycle. And the season never really stops. The garden's working all the time. These strawberries, for instance, are ever-bearing strawberries. So they fruit all summer long, as opposed to June-bearing, which only fruit up in June. And these will keep going until the frost. The kale, we'll be picking that through the frost. I have some giant Musselburgh leeks over there that in previous years I've pulled them out of the frozen ground in the snow and still been able to use them. So the garden can keep working for you if you keep up with it and spend some time in it every day if you can.
Do you keep journals?
I do. You have to. It's a good thing to keep a record of what you're planting. And when you notice that, you know, there's an anomaly or something is a little different, you take a note and then you can say, oh, didn't that happen once before? What were the impacts of that? There are so many inputs in a garden. You have the weather and watering and nutrients and insects. It's going to be different every single year. And then there's climate change, as if it isn't hard enough. So what we need to do, though, is to look at climate change and adapt our gardening to it, changing our fall planting schedule. As our frost date gets later, we can leverage that. Let's take advantage of it and plant lettuce and arugula in September so that we can have these things in October.
Before we close, is there anything else you'd like to say?
I'd just like to wish everybody a great harvest season. It's still going on. Get everything you can out of your garden and put it to bed. Cover it over. Give yourself a break by spending a little extra time now so that when the spring comes, you can do the fun stuff right away and not be faced with the giant weedy mess. That's my best advice.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge.
Thank you very much, Rosie. It's always a pleasure to see you.
Jeffrey Rose is wealthy with sustainable knowledge and inspiration. I recorded this audio in the autumn of 2023. Wild Yarrow Farm has an Instagram page and is located on New Turnpike Road in Coshecton, New York.
For WJFF and Farm and Country, this is Christine San Jose. Along the Poets Row today, we have a real treat. We are going to be hearing one of our best-loved local poets, Tracy Goss Rancy. It's a very topical poem. It's called Bright Colors Dying. You arrive in autumn to an American election. The biggest business for the bosses, a two-year hyperbolic TV spot situation, appearing in sleek, slack little black numbers, saving room for say-anything pluck with a tiny flag pinned to lapels. With jabber-lipping jaws, our election falls down around us, like a hoard of blocks that won't stay stacked, fall the way bright leaves flicker, twitter front to back, red to dusty pink, orange to pale peach, a long fall from a height of enthusiastic foliage, butterscotch to butter, to bright topics, to pasty platforms, saying one thing today, another later, flip-flop, tumble-fumble, turn and roll, flutter to a soft landing on water, wet dirt, or a pile of leaves, the collective's weight off the branch. You have one vote to drop down, like a solitary dying, one leaf trying to change your positioning on the planet. That was our own well-loved Tracy Goss Rancy. Can I just say, before we hear Tracy read another of her own poems, you will vote, won't you? Farm, country, city, village, every isolated hamlet, please get out and vote. This has been Christine San Jose for Farm and Country along the Poets Row.
We hope that you enjoyed our show this week, with production by Radio Catskill volunteers Keith Hubbard, Christine San Jose, and myself, Rosie Starr. Special thanks goes to our guests, Lee from Project Meadow Garden Design in Narrowsburg, New York, and Jeffrey Rose from Wild Yarrow Farm in Coshecton, New York. Thanks for listening local to Farm and Country and supporting Radio Catskill. When I listen to Radio Catskill, I feel connected to the goodness of our community. Every day, I hear a variety of music genres, unique personalities, and topical information. Join me in recognizing the importance of our local NPR station by financially supporting WJFF Radio Catskill. Listen on air. Stream us live at WJFFradio.org. We are Radio Catskill, local news, culture, conversations, and NPR.
Support comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, fighting for clean air, land, and water since 2008, both locally and beyond. Information online at their Main Street storefront in Narrowsburg or their office in the Narrowsburg Union. Damascus.